Hello, and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. Today's podcast is unnumbered yet because I don't know where it will fall in. We're actually doing a consultation, and I'm here with Jesse. So, Jesse, if you want to say hi.
Hey, how's it going?
There we go. So we're going to talk a little bit about just whatever topic Jesse brings up. We're going to discuss it, and hopefully it'll be helpful for everyone to hear what goes into the situation and what information is discussed, and it can help your life as well. So, Jesse, why don't you fill us in on what you want to talk about?
Okay, and you know, I'm hoping this does apply to more than just me, so it'd be helpful for other people.
But yes.
So kind of my longer fitness journey, you know, I'm not a spring chicken. I've been working out for many years. I know you have a similar story too.
Mm-hmm.
I've gained a lot of weight and size over the years. No complaints when it comes to that. I've really gotten into the programming and I've learned as much as I can on my own, but everything has been about, you know, progressive overload, you know, strength programs and things like that. It's always been about progression. Well, even though it's a weird topic to say for most guys, probably, ladies probably have a different opinion, or some people in particular sports have a different opinion, but I'm kind of at the point where I want to now maintain.
Yeah.
Strength is always good to gain, right? Strength is good for everybody, but at some point, you got to go, I'm probably big enough.
Yeah.
Which I never even thought those words would ever come out of my mouth, right? I'm a guy coming from the cross country, you know, rolled shoulders, small body, 135 pounds high school to 235 pound grown man. And I never thought I would go, yeah, I've gotten big enough.
That's
but at
badass.
Some point you got to go, I'm only 5'7", so I need to, I'm happy with where I am. I love the strength part of it. I always want to progress on the strength, but at some point I have to level off, and I've never programmed before, and I've worked with trainers and I've worked with, you know, myself learning over the years. I've never programmed to maintain. It's always a progressive deal. So that was kind of a new one for me, and I thought this was a good opportunity to get a different perspective and some knowledge that I don't have on that, on kind of how to plan for that.
Yeah. Well, thank you for reaching out, and I do think this is applicable in a lot of ways. One of the main ways would be a lot of the females I like train, or like females who train to look better, they want to improve shape, and maybe they want to get like leaner and make the back of their shoulder a little bit bigger so it balances the front, or they want to make their glutes bigger but they don't want their thighs bigger. So there are going to be cases in which people want to train, they want to make some changes, but they don't want bigger. They just want better quality or different shape. And this is also true of athletes I work with in various sports, because they either have a weight class or they have a performance weight that is best for them. And if they get bigger or heavier, it kind of takes them out of what's best for them. So I that's one of the things when you sent the original topic, I was like, oh, this actually applies to a lot of people because of those kind of factors. So I think this will be a fun topic for people. So have you started already kind of with any ideas or any approaches so far, or is this like you're starting from scratch and kind of all brand new?
Yeah, so kind of a little bit of both, right? So I'm finishing off now. I'm this may be more information we need, but came off of a bulk, kind of cut down a little bit to get back in the body fat range I want to be in, you know, which is only a couple percent difference, which, you know, everybody knows you can't measure exactly at home. It's kind of hard. So more looks than anything, right? I mean, it's, but, and then just maintain strength throughout that, and pretty happy with where I am. I enjoy it. Strength will be good. But, you know, other than that's why I kind of reached out, is other than just doing the same thing every week, which is, I would think, would eventually lead to a decline in strength.
Yes, it would. Adapt, yeah, absolutely.
How do you, you know, if you continue to progress, I think you're going to put on more muscle, but I guess that's maybe it falls into the nutrition realm, right? If you keep your food constant, you're really not going to progress in size. So I'm really kind of dumbfounded, to be honest. I've never programmed for it before.
Okay, so what we can look for is there's a couple things we can definitely apply, and what I want to do is go through and apply them directly to you, and then we'll extrapolate on how other people can use the information. So how many days a week do you currently train?
I just switched programming from 5 to 4 weights, and I do cardio separate than that. And then as far as activity, I also do some pretty extended hikes on the weekend. So that's kind of weights 4 days a week, cardio mixed in throughout the week, and then other activity on the weekend.
Okay, awesome. That's good. It's a definitely healthy lifestyle. When the cardio, what type of cardio and how often do you typically do it?
Right now, it's treadmill inside where I'm in Colorado, so there's fires everywhere and you can't run outside.
Dang. Okay.
You're just breathing ash in right now. It rotates throughout the time, so treadmill, bike, running, walking, hiking, bike inside and outside. So I generally try to rotate between those.
Okay.
Because of COVID, I don't have access to some of the other machines that I have at a local gym right now.
Yeah.
But I try to rotate mainly through those forms of cardio.
Okay. And how often do you do like HIIT style, like intensity intervals, or you just do like kind of a steady state? Does it change all the time?
So I do tend to change it. I like steady state more than it. I like the HIIT style some, but I've gotten more progress over the years as far as when I was trying to lean out.
Yes.
Steady state seems to work better for me. I'm an old distance runner, so it seems to work better for me. But I'll try to generally mix it up a little bit instead of doing the same thing every day. If I'm doing 4 days a week of cardio, I'll try to mix it up 2 and 2 or 3 and 1 usually.
Okay. Sounds good. So we know if our main concern or our main goal of programming right now is going to be how to program to prevent additional muscle mass. We know that cardio doesn't typically produce muscle mass. So unless somebody's doing some crazy sprint training, they're, you know, which might cause their thighs to grow. But other than that, cardio is a safe bet for us. You can kind of do whatever you want to do with the cardio, and that won't negatively impact our ultimate goal of how to control muscle gain. So cardio is good. One of the things that people would typically want to look for is, though, am I doing too much cardio to where I'm too worn out for my weight training? I can tell that you know how to do, like, make sure that doesn't happen. But to the listeners, they would want to make sure that if you're going to lift weights, make sure it's not impaired by how much cardio you're doing and you're just kind of worn out and you can't lift weights well. Because if they can't lift weights well, they're not going to get all the shaping effect they want. They're not going to get the muscle damage, which helps towards fat loss. So my way of thinking of it is, in the training, I would still have the weight training be the top priority. And then cardio is something I enjoy. It's definitely really important, but I wouldn't sacrifice the quality of my training for the cardio. And that's even if the person doesn't want to build muscle mass, because of all the other benefits the training has, such as like increased strength. And then we talked about like the fat loss for the muscle damage, and then also just athleticism, body weight strength, just feeling good as we get older in life, those kind of things. So the cardio sounds like it can stay the same. We don't have to kind of make any modifications to that. So then the extra activity, again, if that's mostly cardio based, that's not going to cause any issues with gaining tissue as well. So we don't have to worry about modifying that either. So it looks like what we have to look for is, in the weight training, how can we have you still enjoy weight training, still get stronger, get leaner, have all the fun to it, but not worry about building tissue. So we're going to come to nutrition at the end, but there are things in training structure that helps us. So one of the things we can think of, and I'm just spitballing here as we go through, we can kind of redefine things or kind of, narrow our focus. But one of the components that are helpful is thinking of our programming as kind of categories of things we want to do. Meaning, so I'll call this like a template or a conceptual program, to where some programs, let's say, for example, you have an exercise of dumbbell overhead press. And if you do it week one, you do it week two, week three, week four, you're saying, well, if I progress over 4 weeks, I'm going to get bigger from that. So what we can say is, what does a dumbbell overhead press represent? It represents just some type of an overhead press. So we can do week one, be a dumbbell overhead press with palms facing in front, like a normal traditional overhead press. Week two, you might do an overhead press with your palms neutral. And that's a little bit more challenging on stability, and it kind of emphasizes the triceps a little bit more. Week three, you could do an overhead press of maybe a dumbbell, like an Arnold-style overhead press. So, and if anybody doesn't know what that is, they can YouTube that real fast. But it's a different variation that has like a twisting hand rotation. And then week three, maybe you could do a single arm, like, overhead press. Or you could do a piston press where you pressed one arm, then the other. So what it allows us to do is, that category of need, training the shoulders in an overhead plane, can be met, but by switching up what we do, it prevents the need for a progressive overload. You would just do your best each week, regardless of what it was last week. And then there are more kind of details we could get into where if we pick four variations, we can ensure that we're not picking the lightest variation to the heaviest variation to where we're accidentally getting a progressive overload over 4 weeks.
Right.
So you could actually set it up where you do the heaviest variation week one, then go to the lightest variation in week four. So that way you still have a ton of training. You still get all the kind of even development of the muscle. So if you're, say, in an overhead press, some middle fiber in the middle deltoid is weaker than the other ones, it's going to grow to adapt to the strength required by the other ones. So that improves your shape. But if there's no progressive overload over the 4 weeks of the presses, the overall size doesn't get any bigger. So by selecting the category, but allowing variation within the category, we can prevent progressive overload, but we can still get all the shaping we want in the still evenness of the development around the joint. You can still have all the fun of training to a max effort. You can still kind of enjoy the process of training. So one of the things I do is I like to train to kind of be stronger and be bigger. Years ago when I got into powerlifting as like a competitive kind of experiment because I wanted to learn more about it, I didn't want to get stronger but stay small. I wanted to still get bigger, even though moving up in a weight class might make me a worse powerlifter by number. I didn't care. I wanted to look good. I don't care if I go one time a year and do some awesome number to power to me, but I don't like the way I look 364 other days of the year. So what I do is sometimes after bench press in certain programs and certain waves of programs, I'll just have some type of tricep press down. So whatever I feel like doing that day, whether I saw some cool thing on Instagram, whether I just want to do one of my old traditional ones, or I want to try a weird handle that we just got new for the gym, I just do some type of tricep press down. And I know that maybe for my goals, some sets of somewhere like I'm looking for one or two warm-up sets with three working sets of 10 to 20 reps. Then I just do whatever I feel like that day. Whether I feel like doing 20 because maybe my elbow's annoyed and I'd rather stay light, or I do 10 because I'm feeling super energetic that day. I just do whatever is in that category, whatever variation of that movement I want to do. So, and that's a lot of me talking so far, but does that sound like it might be interesting in the sense to program based on kind of a category of what you want to do rather than the exact exercise?
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. And, you know, I didn't think of it that way, but the variation between the two would stop you from being able to be, well, you know, we practice things to get more efficient at them, right?
So, yes.
But if you're only hitting that one exercise once a month because you rotate through 4 weeks, it makes sense that you wouldn't have to progress as fast, or not have to. That sounds weird to even say that, right?
But yeah.
You wouldn't even progress as quick because but you would get the full rounded range of movement for every muscle group by changing that out so frequently. And I kind of like that style anyway. I've played with that before in the past, and that does make a lot of sense that you're saying that. You still get the full exercise, you still get the full workout that you need, and you're changing it up so it's not like all you do is, you know, like the bro Monday morning bench press, right? You're not doing that every single week. You're doing something different, and which again would help with muscle development, but not necessarily a huge gain in mass. So that's definitely what I'm kind of looking at.
Good. And then I think what we could also do with is, say somebody currently had a weekly routine. So we would, in the lifting world, you call it like a training split. And what that means is like, you know, workout one is this focus, workout two is this focus, so all the listeners can follow along. So say right now the person is doing push-pull legs.
Right.
And let's just make up some things. Say they're working out, 6 days a week. They would do push-pull legs, then just do push-pull legs again. If they're working out 3 days a week, they do push-pull legs and they're done. That's their week. And I've even trained clients where it matched their goals for whatever the reason was. In 4 days, week one, they would do push, pull, legs, and then push again. And then week two, they do the pull, legs, push, pull. So they just keep the rotation. And then week one, they double up on push. Week two, they double up on pull. Week three, they double up on legs. So it has still that recurring structure, but it allows for a 4 day rather than a three or a six.
Right.
We know that that's one option. Another option is upper body versus lower body. So you could do, you know, workouts 1 and 3 upper body, workouts 2 and 4 lower body. And maybe workouts 1 on the upper body is more horizontal plane movements. So like chest presses and rows, maybe workout number 3, which is the second upper body workouts, more vertical plane, so overhead presses and pull-ups and pull-downs. So you can create variations there. So we could do, you don't even have to change it every month, you could do like 8 weeks or 12 weeks, but just for illustration purposes, you could do 1 month of rotating push-pull legs with concepts of what you want to address on each exercise, each workout. Then month 2, you could do upper body, lower body with the change in emphasis where you change from horizontal to vertical in the upper bodies. Maybe the lower body is more of like a squat-based day, the one day a hinge-based day, the next day. Then you can even change it out to like more of like a bro split, like in bodybuilding, where maybe you do like, you know, chest and you know, shoulders on day 1. And then the next day is back and biceps, the next day is legs, the next day is shoulders, or, you know, something like that. So each month, or you could even extrapolate it because it would get a little chaotic to change every 4 weeks, is every 8 weeks you could change the format of your programming. So not only are you changing exercises per week, you're also changing the format per week. And as you said, good luck to the body to try to progressively overload with that much chaos. So you can train like a beast and have a ton of fun, but there's no way in the world your body's going to adapt anything to grow from.
Well, that's exactly what I'm looking for. And I generally do change mine up every 4 weeks. Out for 4 weeks ahead of time, change them up. And kind of my thought was when I was thinking about this before is do exactly what you're saying. So, you know, I know it's a bro split, but I like it. It's fun, right?
Yeah.
Or an upper lower or push pull legs. Even some of the typical bodybuilder, you know, one body part a day, you know, sometimes you're doing twice a day, whatever you got to do. But I was thinking maybe that was a possibility too. Like you're saying, the you don't really have enough time to adapt and you do something totally different, or I'll, you know, add a bunch of full body stuff in and, you know, that confusion, which I know that term gets misused, but the muscle confusion, you know, whatever. Yeah. But I was thinking that would do it. And because the quality of the workout still has to be there or we won't go back, right?
Yes.
I enjoy lifting hard and heavy, and I go all out every single time, but it's always been for the last, well, I don't want to say how old I am, but I've been out of high school for more than 25 years anyway, but for the last 25 years, it's been about getting bigger, stronger the whole time, right? So I guess at the point where I want to stay healthy and keep in good shape, keep super strong, but also I'm not trying to get to 300 pounds. So I'm a little short for that, but I'd be a weeble wobble at that point, you know. So, but I think that actually does help a lot. So the confusion part of it helps a lot, changing it up a lot, and rotating through so that you never get super adapted and super compensated to whatever you're trying to do.
Yeah, and it still allows for an enormous amount of open variability to where you can have a lot of fun. You can kind of do whatever you feel like doing that day. In regards to, this is one of the reasons why I like it, because I exercise the first. Reason why I ever got into training was actually for emotional and mental health. So if I feel constrained by a program, I no longer enjoy lifting. So this is something that I learned about myself, and to become a better trainer, I have forced myself to do programs, you know, up to like 20 week increments, so I knew how they worked so I could prescribe them to clients, but I really don't like it. So I would rather train based on what I feel like doing that day. Some people like that freedom. Some people don't. So there could be, if somebody's looking at trying to create this for themselves, is they could create like 4 different workouts to use over 4 weeks and then just do it 12 weeks in a row. And then that would give them some balance of structure, but still some variety. But it sounds like you and I are the type where we're fun and totally okay with doing whatever the hell we feel like doing every time we come in. And that is enjoyable. Now, one of the countering points that somebody might say is, well, what if I want to keep a base strength of my deadlift? Maybe I just recently hit a 500-pound deadlift and I don't want to lose that. So what they could do is you could do incremental kind of testing or even phases where, I'm just going to throw out some examples, but let's say you want to maintain your squat, bench, and deadlift. Well, month 1, you could do normal basic strength training for squat, but you can have total crazy fun with all the other workouts. Month 2, you then normalize bench press to maintain your technique with it. And then by the fourth week of it, you retest like a conservative max, whether it's a one rep max or three rep max, five rep max, whatever. Just something that's a testing moniker that you can then use. Month three, you go through boring basic deadlift training, but it maintains technique. It maintains your consistency. Let's say then at month four, you go back to the squat being regimented, and then you have that month one number that you check to see if you can progress on or if you can at least maintain. So somebody can maintain some normalization of structure in a single workout or a single lift and then let the other ones be fun. So if somebody is afraid of losing strength in a big lift, like there's a guy I know, and he deadlifted 500 at 50. And his goal now is every year he wants to be able to deadlift 500. I forget whether he's like 53 or 54 now, but him and I have talked about this concept is he has a crazy lifestyle and there's a lot of other things involved, but he always wants to maintain that deadlift. So we talk about the importance of here's the minimum, like, well, here's the appropriate stuff that you would need to maintain your deadlift. Get this in and then everything else, do whatever the hell you feel like. And that gives him that confidence of knowing if he has to drop off on other stuff because of the craziness of life, oh well, but he knows his deadlift will be maintained. When he has the time to do the other stuff, he doesn't have to be super structured. He can have a ton of fun. So that way, if it has to drop off again, he doesn't get frustrated that it falls off. So this is something where we're talking about changing up everything, but there are options to also change up only some of the things.
So it's possible to still keep the strength lifts in there, and I fall into that category too, right? I don't want to lose. I've gained a lot of strength over the years, mm-hmm. You know, worked really hard, just like you, you know, like you have, and I sure don't want to lose all that. But yeah, at some point, it's more of a maintenance deal, but not any particular numbers. But yeah, I wouldn't want them to drop off, and you know, you wouldn't want to drop off and lose all your strength. So
yeah,
I like the idea of maybe you're still hitting some of those big lifts. Maybe not as frequently a couple times a week as I have in the past, but once every couple weeks or, you know, yeah, once a month, you really focus on it super big, or that seems like that would still be able to maintain that strength, but you're not going to progress from there.
Yeah. And that's something where like, there's a lot of variable to it. But let's say like typically, especially if you've been lifting for how long you've been lifting, if you were to do 3 weeks of kind of going back to a regular squat, you would remember your technique and you'd become technique proficient again by the fourth week to do a conservative max safely. So what we might find then is, okay, if I just did a conservative max, which is relatively heavy training, maybe the following month, I'm going to allow myself to do different types of squats, but we can pick all underloaded variations. So what this means is something that you, say your best normal squat is 500 pounds because it makes the math easy for me. So we would find four variations of squats that no matter how hard you try, you can't lift 500 pounds. So these would be like specialty bars or paused, or you superset them as part of a circuit with something else, so you're totally freaking exhausted by the time you try to do it. So then month two, you're getting an underloaded stimulus. Well, maybe month three, we go to overloaded variations, like some elevated box, like squat that helps you overload, or band or chains or craziness, depending on what the person has available. And you rebuild like a top end strength, like a maximal strength. Then month four, you go back to regular squatting. You refine that stuff that you did on month three and you do your max again. So what it would be is almost like an intensity wave is month one is normalized. Month two is underloading to allow recovery, maybe while you also extra emphasize on the deadlift. Month three is an overloading to make sure that you maintain that base strength of squats. Month four, you go back to regular squat, you refine your technique and you test again. So you can even have very purposefulness in the play of month two and three. You're allowing a lot of variables, but you're ensuring the variables are underloaded or overloaded or what direction they're going to take you in.
No, that's great. I like that. That gives me a lot to think about because I don't want to lose strength, right? And I still want to be able to focus on the big lifts. You build those up over years. You don't want them to go all the way.
Yeah, you work too hard for them.
Yeah, you work too hard for them, right?
Yeah.
So in the, like you mentioned earlier, the kind of a category, like it, let's say you break it up and you kind of plan on buying a category so you have the looseness to be able to go, instead of overhead press today, I'm going to do, you know, I don't know, some other lift, you know,
yeah,
like a military press or something a little different. would you recommend, like, say, on the shoulder segment? So we're talking about shoulders, right? Like main, like a main lift and an accessory type lift. We have probably different terms, right, for that? Because you're educated, and I'm just I learned mine.
No, those as are a good terms, right? Yeah, they're good terms.
So like an overhead press, and then maybe like, you know, something as simple as I'm doing rear delts, like a face pull or some smaller, and then but those can rotate through. So I know that I have a strength lift and a small lift.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's say, for example, like I was working with somebody last night, we were doing deadlifts. They're an aesthetic athlete who also wants to get stronger because they want to build bigger legs, but whatever they can do for sets of 10, they know if they get stronger at a one rep max, they can then bring heavier weights back to their sets of 10. So this is a person who's on, they already have really good muscle, but they could afford to build some more. And they notice that when their strength plateaued, their growth plateaued. So one of the things we did in their workout last night was the intent of that workout was to improve their deadlift and grow their lower body. We had a warm-up that included something to warm up the hips, something to warm up the knees. And like for us, we did a hip circle, like side steps, and we did band TKEs. So, but you could plug in anything there, but this would be like the beginning of the structure was making sure you address something to warm up the hips, something to address warming up the knees. They then went into their deadlift, their main deadlift variation. We then went into a secondary variation that addressed some kind of physical or technical flaw of the main variation. So that way we're correcting the main variation in some way. After that, we went into hamstring damage and quad damage, and then they left the gym. So we could create a workout structure in which we know that we have the elements needed to maintain a deadlift, but it also allows for play within those elements. So does that make sense?
No, it absolutely does make sense. And that's kind of what I was thinking too, you know, with that, the heavy lifts, the accessory lifts, you're still supporting all those, the movement throughout. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to do deadlifts every single day.
No, yeah, so, you can do any kind of deadlift, or you don't even have to do a deadlift, but it allows you for a lot of variableness. And then if we go back to that concept of if we wanted to manage underloading and overloading, the reason why we would do that is typically if you're going to do a conservative max of a main lift, you're going to stress the body. There's going to be some micro damage to connective tissues. There's going to be just some compensation to good form, probably. There's just some annoyance. So if we go into an underloading phase, that underperforms that lift, which allows for some of those micro damages to catch up and be recovered. But if you go too far or too long underloaded, then when you go to try to pick up your heavy weight again, it feels awful. So that's why it's good to go into an overloaded phase, which is ways in which to do heavier lifts, just to, so that we get used to picking up that weight again. So an example of this, real quick example for the listeners, was at one point in time, I got an injury and I had just reached a 600-pound squat. I foolishly trained clients and didn't eat or drink anything from 11 a.m. to 7 at night. And then I had a squat workout with a friend. And I didn't want to cancel my friend, but I had not ate anything or drank anything for 8 hours. And on like my fourth warm-up of squats, I tore my hamstring and my groin. And lesson learned on my part. But I didn't want to lose the 600-pound squat, and I found that I could still carry our yoke without pain. So I actually walked every single week, twice a week, with 600 pounds on the yoke while I rehabbed my legs. So that way, by carrying the yoke around, my body stayed used to 600 pounds while I still had to do underloaded work to recover my injuries. So that's the benefit of the underloading, overloading is it makes sure that you don't lose the sensation of what it feels like to pick up heavy things.
Well, and there's that mental aspect of that, and it is huge, right? You know, mm-hmm. it's, you don't want the shock of, oh no, that's what 600 pounds feels like again after 2 or 3 weeks. That's never good. But that does lead directly into another question I had. So, and you mentioned it already. So, with the nutrition, in the past, and this, you know, conventional knowledge, not like formal knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. But kind of what everybody does when I'm going into a strength phase or I'm trying to grow, I feed my body. Yeah. I feed it, whatever I can do without getting fat, right? I mean, I'll feed it, but now I generally eat healthy, so I'm lucky with that. I eat pretty clean food, so
you just eat more clean food.
And then when I'm going to cut down, when I start cutting, if I'm ever cutting, you know, and you start taking calories away, I tend to back off the really heavy lifts. Mm-hmm. I lift in a higher range than normal because I don't feel like I have all the energy that I normally do, all the protection I normally do. How would that play into I know we haven't even talked about nutrition yet, but I'm assuming we're going to be somewhere where it's more of a maintenance calorie type deal. Does that affect your, like you said, you know, going super heavy? Is your body going to respond to that a different way?
There's a couple things. One of the things I'd like to throw out there is one of the ways to approach managing heavy lifting when you're in a caloric deficit or kind of a questionable caloric amount is instead of doing less weight, do less reps. So if I typically can do, you know, say 500 pounds for five reps, I'll still get under 500 pounds, but I'll only do sets of two. So that way in which I still keep my body used to the weight, but I'm lessening the damage per set, therefore I'm lessening the risk and the caloric requirement to help address that risk. So this is something I do with competitive powerlifters. There's the term deload in competitive powerlifting, where the idea of it is your body only ever grows from you pushing it into an uncomfortable position. So you have to stress the body, and then the hope is that right before it breaks, you bring the stress level down, you let it compensate and recover to that stress. So it's kind of like you push your comfort wall, you push your comfort zone, right before you snap, you just hold there and you stay. And then you let the body catch up, and then you push your comfort zone again. So it's kind of like you push, weight, push, weight, push, weight. So and that's weight, W-A-I-T, not the other one. But what you can do is in deloads, one of the things that competitive powerlifters get wrong is they just don't pick up heavy things. So they'll have worked their ass off over 8 weeks, maybe to get to a 500-pound squat. Then they just take a week where they do some walking lunges and fluffy, stupid stuff. And then all of a sudden, when they try to get back under the weight, they go, oh, my God, this feels miserable. Well, no one said you had to not pick up that weight. They just said don't strain yourself with it.
Right.
The main key we're looking to manage is strain, not weight load. Now, weight load is a factor of strain, but so is rep range. So if I typically would do something for five reps, let me just do it for two or three. And that's a way to better manage that. So this is something where if we have, like, say, a four-week phase where you want to push a, let's say, squats, okay, and we're going to let our other workouts be less, they're what we want to have fun with, but we're not trying to push a strength level on those. We can play with our nutrition specific to the workout that we want to manipulate. If I squat on Monday, my body is only going to be recovering squat-based abilities Monday evening into Tuesday, arguably maybe Wednesday morning. That means I can do nutritionally something appropriate to maintain health of squat Monday evening, Tuesday, and Wednesday morning. But I can bring my nutrition to a different place the rest of Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So I might want to be in a, not a purposeful caloric surplus in the recovery phase for my squat, but a purposeful, I know this is enough calories. So we can call it like caloric maintenance. So I squat and I know that this amount of calories is healthy enough and gonna let me grow from my squat. It's not so much I'm gonna get a belly, but it's not a deficit. I'm definitely not gonna lose fat. We would have that calorie count for Monday night, Tuesday, and Wednesday morning. Then we would go into a known and purposeful caloric deficit during the rest of Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So that allows us to have appropriate calorie load to maintain our squat, but then appropriate calorie load on the other days that we don't have a surplus, external surplus, or we're not kind of missing goals of getting leaner. And one of the ways to think of this is calories are never going to be perfectly precise. So in the time frame of the recovery from squat, Monday night, Tuesday, and Wednesday morning, we're going to err on the side of either being what we need or slightly over. Then the remainder of the week, we err on the side of what we need or slightly under. That way we average out at the end of the week a body that didn't get any bigger, didn't get any smaller. We just kind of stayed where we were, which is kind of what we want in regards to being stronger but not getting bigger.
You mentioned squat, but is that so that caloric surplus, is that around bigger lifts? You're saying squat because that is a bigger lift, right? But is that, would you time that around, like, I know what part of the week my bigger lifts are these 2 days, and then my, I don't want to say bigger lifts, but bigger lifts versus, you know, the lighter weight, the higher rep. Is that when you kind of front load that on those, the days you know are going to be heavier? and then have it lower on the other days, or?
Yeah, I would. You can categorize it in a lot of ways. One of the ways I would think of it is we've talked about the goal here is I don't want to build muscle tissue, but I don't want to get weak. Well, what is important to me, I will feed. So if I want to, we're given an example in the previous examples we talked about waves where I might focus on my squat on month 1, 4, 7, whatever the hell the progressions of that is. maybe I focus on overhead press on months 2, you know, 5, 8, whatever. So maybe for month 1, my main focus, what's important to me is my squat. So I will properly calorically load to protect my squat. And then let the other ones be maintenance or slightly below. Then month 2, I switch over to maybe properly calorically loading my overhead press. But it's also important to know then that month 2, our squat goes to an underloaded variation or just unknown variations that are kind of scattered. So I don't need all those protective calories for the squat because I'm kind of all over the place and just having fun. I'm not trying to progress it or trying to overload, like try to do maximal performance of it. So if I'm wanting to maintain maximal performance of something, I do have to maintain my nutrition to be safe, but I don't have to maintain maximal performance all the time. If we focus on our squat really hard for a month, and then you take a month to not pay attention to it, it's not going to drop off. Actually, you're probably going to still be recovering from the stimulus of the first month and probably still building strength. You won't have the moments to test it or see if it's happening, so you're not going to necessarily check your squat in month 2, but you are still recovering from the whole first month during the second month. So there still is strength being progressed. There's still at least being strength being maintained. So that's something.
Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to say, that's something to consider is, depending on the structure we used on how to emphasize or maintain the big lifts, if you try to do all the big lifts, so let's just go with 4. Squat, bench, deadlift, overhead press. If I try to emphasize all of them at one time, I won't have any days where I'm underfeeding. So I will accidentally grow because I'm accidentally eating too much all the time. So we do have to consider some kind of de-emphasizing of some of those main lifts to make sure that we don't overeat and end up getting that growth.
Okay, so kind of feeding whatever that rotation looks like, kind of feeding the focus muscle for the week.
Yeah.
Whatever the one you're looking through, that's the big one. Now, do you do that, but let's say in generic numbers, right, because it's easier on math.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, 3,000 calories a day is your standard maintenance amount.
Yes.
Do you still look at that over the week as, like, that's still 21,000 calories, but on those focus days, maybe that you bring it up to 3,500 and then you're still balancing out, right? And it goes down to 2,500 on the non-focus days. You're still looking at the same maintenance. You're just shifting the balance of the scales.
Yeah, so that's a very common way people will consider calories is daily calories and then a weekly average. So I actually just got done talking with a competitive strongman, and we were talking about actually maintaining calories based on percentages of how many calories he had per meal of the day and the percentages of where his calories came from per meal based on his training. So for example, he has a low activity beginning of the day. He trains midday and then has a very active job until right before he goes to bed. So what we talked about was is if his energy level looks like basically low in the beginning of the day, high in the end of the day, his calories should match that. If his calories are high at the beginning of the day, more than he needs, he's unnecessarily just putting in extra calories. But then later in the day, if he's under eating while he's at work, he's unnecessarily under eating, kind of under fueling himself. So what we talked about was most people, their day follows a bell curve. What we would want to do with our calories is to also have a bell curve, but our calories are actually slightly in front of our activities. What this means is I eat a little more than I need to going into my workout. So that way I fuel my workout and I have a kick-ass workout. But I eat a little bit less than I need to for the entire rest of the day. So I slowly pick off some body fat and recover as needed, but I have no intentional surpluses.
Okay.
So what we would want to do is how you track calories, doing a weekly average. Let's say we didn't even track per day. We just tracked all the calories we ate by a week. That does have some degree of data tracking, some degree of control, but that's a pretty ridiculously large window. That would be a little chaotic. So then people figure out, okay, well, let me track it per 24 hours. There is nothing magical about 24 hours. It's just easy. It's easy for us to do that. I was telling him, our body decides on what to do with our calories per second of the day. Every single second, it determines what it needs. So if we wanted to track calories perfectly, we would track them per second. So I have 5 calories this second, 4 calories that second. It's impossible. We can't do that. What we have to do is we have to decide what rate of tracking is manageable for me. Most people can handle daily tracking. I will make the argument that if you train in the morning, it's important to fuel your morning more than the evening. So most people, and you live a healthy life, so this won't apply to you as much, but some of the listeners, is they'll say, okay, I'm supposed to eat 2,000 calories per day. Well, I do that, and I'm totally fine. But their 2,000 calories is some BS breakfast with a cup of coffee. They get too busy during the day. They don't eat anything. Then they eat 1,800 calories right before they go to bed. That's the most people's structure, is they undereat during the day and overeat at night. Then they wonder why they feel like crap and look like crap. And it's because that's not how the body used the calories. So even though their calories were correct for a quote-unquote 24-hour cycle, they weren't correct in the usage of them. With all that said, so what we would do is we would want to make sure your workouts were fueled ahead of time. If it was a big workout with a big lift, then what you do after the workout is you eat maintenance. If it was any other workout and you just were having fun, you would go ahead and be in a small, slight deficit, and that would prevent the muscle gain that we're trying to avoid. So most females, and I'm going to throw this out there as a huge kind of general statement that they're probably going to be angry at, some of them, but most females, what happens is when they start lifting weights, they'll say lifting weights made me gain weight. That's physiologically impossible. Exercise can't make you fat. That doesn't even make sense. What ends up happening is they overate. So they got tired because they expended extra energy and they overate. So even if they control their calories, they tend to, and this would be true of males, so I guess I could get rid of the female thing. The reason why I brought up the females is females will be likely the other category of people not wanting to gain muscle mass. So I apologize, females, if I kind of threw you under the bus there. So anybody not wanting to gain muscle mass, let me correct myself here. What they would do is they would be in a deficit. They would work out. They'd be tired, exhausted from the workouts. They would then have extra calories to recover. The problem is they're having the extra calories after the training. That's when it's just going to convert to body fat. They need to have the extra calories ahead of training so they have kick-ass amazing workouts that they don't then get tired from because they didn't dig themselves in a big hole.
How would you then, and I think you've actually mentioned it on the show before, but so let's say some like me, I'm first thing in the morning. I work at a home gym, so at least during COVID I do. But I have a fully equipped home gym, so I'm pretty lucky when it comes to that. But there's not a lot of calories I can get on board before 5:30 in the morning. Now I do tend to front load my day, so but I plan all my meals ahead of time, so I know what I'm gonna eat the whole day before it happens. For the week, right? So I know my exact food. And I'm kind of lazy when it comes to it. I'll plan it out, and I eat the exact same thing every day.
I do that, too. It's just so much easier.
It's easy for me. So
much easier.
But it's hard to front load all those calories super early in the morning, right?
Yes.
But I will eat after that and then taper off throughout the day because I have an active job, but it's not hard work, right? I mean, it's not physical labor or anything like that. Taper out until the evening and then start back over again. But it sounds like I need to get some calories on board before the meal.
There's yes and a no. So some of the clients I work with, like if they have a thyroid medicine, they're supposed to take the thyroid medicine and then not eat for an hour. But what happens if they work out in the morning and they're like, well, crap, I don't want to wait for an hour, eat food, and then work out. I've already like too much into my day.
Right.
So this will be a similar example. And typically what we recommend at that time then is that you would want to implement implement an intra-workout drink. So I might not be able to get a lot beforehand, but I can at least get something in while I'm working out to mitigate some of the hole that I'm digging myself into. So you do an intra-workout drink, and there's a world of science behind that. But the idea is that you have some type of quick digesting energy source, which is going to be sugar. So you would have that, so that way as you're drinking it, you're using it. The idea for the intra-workout drink is that I can use it while I'm working out. So if somebody is afraid of sugars, they're countering the whole freaking point of what an intra-workout drink is. It's I wouldn't want to have something slow digesting, so I don't want to have a meal that I can use 3 hours from now while I'm trying to work out. So it's kind of like, kind of annoying to do that. So we would want some form of sugar. And then whether you added like protein to it in the form of like BCAAs or a whey isolate, there is some science to that, that if you have a very muscle damaging style of training, then there is benefit to adding BCAAs or whey isolate. BCAAs are typically very expensive compared to whey isolate, and there doesn't seem to be much of a performance or resulting factor difference between whey isolate and BCAAs, so I typically tell people to go with whey isolate because it's cheaper. By the way, when I did my master's in nutrition, I had to write a 50-page paper, 200 peer-reviewed research journal kind of supported paper on post-workout protein digestion. So wow. I know when I can say that there's not much of a difference because I literally have read the research for it. So, but that's what I would do is I would drink something while I'm working out. You can start with a small amount if you've never done it before. So somebody can just drink, you know, 16 ounces of whatever, like a Gatorade. And then over time, you would build it up to what the most you could tolerate. And that's kind of just balancing what you're comfortable with versus getting the results, but not being so uncomfortable you want to throw up while you work out. So you would just put something in your face while you work out. So that way, by the end of the workout, you're not starting at a complete empty hole, like deficit. There is something right in there. You would then front load the next two meals, have them be very high, and then taper off from there. So it sounds like you're doing everything correct. If you had not been doing an intra-workout drink, I would add that. But other than that, you're doing everything right. Is you're eating as many calories close to the workout as you can. You eat fewer calories away from the workout.
And I've never tried an intra-workout, so that'll be an interesting new twist. But I'm, you know, that makes a lot of sense because there's definitely mornings for anybody that works out in the mornings. If you don't eat beforehand, you're sucking wind by the end of that.
Yeah, you feel like crap.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you know, most of us don't get to do, working out for a living, so you have to fit it into your lifestyle, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Yep, I remember when I taught at the university, I had to work out at 5:45 every morning, and that was horrible. I hated it. Mm-hmm. It was the worst, 2 years of training in my life because I'm not a morning person. So.
No.
Yes.
I don't mind doing it, but if I don't, because for me, it's the predictability. Because if not, it's easy to center your calories on your morning workout. It's hard to center around your nighttime workout if anything can happen during the day.
Absolutely.
So that's... I'd rather know that it's done and I get to plan how I want to rather than, hey, I hope it happens great at the end of the day. So.
Yes. So this is just for Jesse right now. I'm moving the phone so I can plug it in. but I just want him to know I'm not hanging up on him. So, so nutrition-wise, if we're looking at the concept of trying to fuel our workouts, but not so much fuel that we are growing when we don't want to grow. We've talked about so far is controlling calories. The idea is to eat enough that we feel like we have enough energy for our workouts. And then the rest of the day, just eating in controlled kind of maintenance calories, avoiding surpluses as much as we can. In general, one of the mistakes people will make is they'll undereat before the workout. Then later in the day, they'll feel miserable and they'll overeat. So for all the listeners, please try to eat enough at the before your workout or during your workout or the meal right after your workout. So that way, the rest of the day, you're not super hungry and you're overeating at night. The other thing we could play with is, what are we eating? We know that protein is what our body builds muscle with. So if I want to build a brick house, I have to have bricks. If I want to build muscle, I have to have protein. Well, there are recommended amount of proteins based on somebody's body weight, based on their training style, blah, 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 blah. So what we would say is, what have I eaten before that made me grow? So if you typically ate, say, 200 grams of protein per day, and that was enough protein that you built muscle, well, what if we go to 160? Then what you'll find is you don't have enough extra protein to build new muscle, but we still want enough protein to fix the muscle we damaged. So what we can think of is we're talking about a caloric surplus, playing with that. We can also play with a protein surplus. So we can modify our protein content to make sure we don't have surpluses of protein as well.
That makes a lot of sense. Even though it's scary to think about cutting protein, that's never been in my vocabulary before. A lot of us, right? Like, hey, you're having too much protein. I haven't heard that very often, right? But it makes sense, right? Because you're not trying to feed your body to build more muscle. You're doing it to repair the damage that you've done.
Yep.
And I hate to say maintain, but maintain muscle. So that that makes sense. It's not a, and you know, I've definitely, and then carbs for energy, you know, kind of play with those as much as you need. But those are pretty easy to manipulate. Carbs are easy to manipulate.
Yeah, very.
Some people, right? But that makes sense to have the proper amount of fat and kind of play with that to see how that maintains.
Yeah. So I would along with the calorie control, I would also control my protein to make sure I don't have unnecessary amounts. And how you know this is you bring your protein down from what you knew allowed you to grow before. And how you would know if you undershot it would be in a week or two, your elbow kind of bothers you. Or in a week or two, your chest muscle kind of feels like an odd strain that you don't typically have. You would then bump your protein up a little bit and see if those little aches and annoyances go away. So that helps kind of modify that or like manage that. I mean, is we know we don't want a surplus of protein, but we know we want enough. That's just trial and error in playing with it. There really is no exact science because how much muscle damage you create in a squat workout versus an overhead press workout is vastly different. So even if you tried to get it perfect per day, you would have to do it perfect per workout. And then it becomes just too hard to manipulate. So if somebody said, okay, I want you to eat 155 grams of protein on shoulder days, but 185 grams of protein on squat days, everybody's going to say, screw you. I have a million other things I have to do in my life. I can't be counting grams of protein. So if we go with a sum reduction and then just trial and error, see how it goes. And that's one thing we can do. So nutritionally, I think that would be a good idea, is to control calories per day, but knowing that you have to front load your calories earlier in the day so that way you're not overeating at night. And then you can go ahead and track a weekly average in the sense of saying, okay, I've trained for 4 weeks and oh dang, I did actually go up 2 pounds. Well, let me bring my weekly average down and then modify per day what that change would be. So then the next 4 weeks, I don't go up at all. So it just gives us more data to play with. But that's the nutritional things I would focus on, is making sure my calories are timed the right time so I don't have surpluses when I don't want them. Make sure my protein is lower than normal so that way I don't have extra protein going towards growth that I don't want. So
no, that makes a lot of sense. And that's something that's fairly easy to track, right? If you're tracking your macros anyway, it's fairly easy to track and adjust that. Because there's some indicators, muscle damage, how quick you're recovering, whether you're gaining weight up or down. That makes sense, and that's a metric that is understandable, so that helps a lot.
Good. Yeah, so I think this is, if we kind of look at the, like now we step back and look at everything we've talked about, it's going to be creating concepts or categories, let's say categories in our training. So that way we don't feel like we have to stick with the same exercise, and that actually kind of prevents progressive overloading anyhow, because you can't compare apples to oranges. So if you're doing an overhead press because you know that's important to you, or let's just say like a female is doing glutes, and actually males should do glutes too, but that might be, if a female's listening to this, their focus might be, okay, I want to grow my glutes, but I don't want to grow my thighs. Well, they would want to make sure that they're still doing all their glute training. So they like you want to have that, if that's an important element, have that in there, but what they do to train their glutes can be different every time. Just like we said, the overhead press can be different every time.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that makes a lot of sense. The categories, nutrition, trying not to make sure you have too much protein and excess of protein that you don't need.
Yep.
That's, and then varying it up quite a bit. I think that's good.
Yeah, so the training is categories, so you don't repeat repetitive exercises. And then we even talked about changing it from month to month, changing formats. So not only changing exercises, but changing training styles. So that's a good way to prevent the body from adapting to it and preventing it from being able to grow tissue, because you're not repeating the stimulus if you're changing the style as well. And then nutrition is controlling calories, eat them early in the day, avoid surpluses away from your training. You know, that kind of thing, like fuel enough for your training, but don't overfuel afterwards. And same thing right. with the protein. Eat enough protein to recover, but don't eat too much that you actually get growth from. So it sounds simple when we come back and state that it's just those couple things.
Right.
But it took, you know, an hour of talking about it to get it to that simple. So, but that's why
all
I thought this
was
fun.
Simple. It's the execution, right? So
yes, that becomes the fun part now is how do I take all this information and you know, make it work?
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, so that would be something like there is a next step to it, but I think that at least for the listeners, and I'm hoping for you as well, mm-hmm. now we know some places to go, some directions to go in. We know an approach that will work. We then have right. to modify that approach to our own individual needs. So,
and that's really the most helpful. I'm fine with doing the research and putting all the work in, but I needed a place to start.
Okay, you know,
it's,
good.
Because it's just looking at it from a different perspective, and sometimes it's easier. Well, obviously it's easier when you're educated, you know, you have all the experience, but sometimes it's easier looking at it from the outside. You got to talk it out with somebody, and sometimes it helps to point you in the right direction. So I definitely appreciate that.
Yeah, I think that I love these things. Like, one of my favorite things I used to do back when the gym, when I wasn't so busy, I would go volunteer and do talks at different like businesses or at schools and stuff. And it was just so much fun to answer like random questions. And I always enjoyed just the fun of talking through ideas. So this is always really enjoyable to me. I really love these kind of things because it helps me become a better teacher and it helps me solidify my knowledge better. So it's always something I always walk away with some kind of benefit for sure every single time I do this stuff. So I love it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Do you have any other questions before we wrap up?
No, I think that's it. That's a lot of information. It's a great place to start, and that can help me run for quite a while now with some programming and some food, and you know, and a direction to go with it. Which I think I have. You know, I got some work to put in as far as programming, but mm-hmm. I think that puts me in the right direction, and I definitely appreciate it.
Yeah, so what I would do is the tip on the programming is go through some old workouts and just write the category of what the exercise was for. So if you typically did, say, you know, barbell standing military press, just write overhead press. If you did a pull-up, just write, you know, pull-up, pull-down. You know, just write the category of what your exercises were for, and you'll find that you actually can start with that as a template. So that's a kind of a quick little tip. Yeah. So, okay, what we'll do is I'll go ahead and do the sign-off on this for the listeners, and then you and I can chat for an extra minute or two here to wrap up.
Cool. Okay.
Okay, so thank you, listeners, for listening this long. I hope you have. So I hope there's more than just the two of us here. But if anybody else is interested in a consultation like this, we're offering them for free because I just want to help people, and I think it's a really cool opportunity, and I think people will find it interesting. So if you'd like to participate in this, our email is brutalirongym@gmail.com. Just let me know, and we can sign you up and schedule it. Also, we do have a nutrition education program that we're developing that includes a workbook, and it teaches nutrition, how it works best for you. So most diets are other people's rules for nutrition. What we want to do is teach you through the workbook, through the activities, through the lessons, on how you can write your own rules. So if you'd like to participate in that, again, our email is brutalirongym@gmail.com. Let me know. We're developing the program, so if you'd like to be involved in the development of it, that'd be awesome. You'll get a lot of attention as I'm trying to figure out how to do this correctly. So if you're interested, let us know. Other than that, you can check out our website at www.brutalirongym.com, and we have other services and other things you can check out there. Cool. If you think the podcast is helpful, I'm almost done. But if you think the podcast is helpful, please share it with family and friends. The more people we share it with, the more people we can help live happier, healthier lives. If you like the type of information that we discuss in the podcast, you can find more on our social media channels on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter under the name Brutal Iron Gym. And if you have any questions, feedback, or suggestions, we'd love to hear from you. The podcast is for you, so we want to know what you want to learn about. So let us know at our email, brutalirongym@gmail.com. So I'll let you say goodbye, Jesse, if you want to say goodbye to everybody.
Yeah, goodbye. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. So as always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.